we'd love to do that. For everybody else, welcome. This is the Multiply Vineyard webinar for today, and we are talking about discovering if multi-sites can work for your church. With two of the best from around the vineyard talking about that, we have Jim Plank and Corey Garris with us, and a handful of folks streaming in from all over the country. We're so excited that you're here. Just to dive in right away, we'll be spending about 60 minutes together. We're going to kind of talk big picture of what's happening around the U.S. with multi-site, what's happening in the vineyard, and then what's the process? How have we seen this in the vineyard really happen well and be healthy? To give a bit of an intro for the folks who we do have with us, Jim Plank is the Sullivan Campus Pastor and the All-Campus Executive Pastor for the Urvana Vineyard, coming to us from Illinois today. Hi, Jim. How are you?
We're doing well. Yeah, enjoying the weather and, yeah, enjoying the opportunity just to talk multi-site this afternoon, or this morning, I guess. I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah, this morning.
Wonderful. And we also have Corey Garris, pastor and chief of staff at the Mile High Vineyard, planting neighborhood churches everywhere in Denver and all over. Corey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Happy to be with y'all. Looking forward to our hour together.
Tremendous. Well, we are excited, and let's just kind of dive in. Corey, give us a little bit of an overview of just what's happening with multi-site, and kind of give us the big picture for a minute.
Sure. Yeah. Obviously a lot that we could say here, but just, you know, some of the latest research, just compiling a few thoughts. Nationally, the multi-site movement, you know, has been going on for 15 plus years, 20 years, originated in some of the big boys, Seacoast, in South Carolina, North Coast, and California. And, obviously things have developed over time. We're nearing about 10,000 churches in America who are using the multi-site model in some way, shape, or form. That number just continues to increase year by year, and right now shows no sign of stopping. There are some reasons for that. What we're finding is that when multi-sites are started, whether you call them campuses or sites or whatever terminology you want to use, when we do the research, we're finding that they are growing faster than a traditional church plant. Now, everything I'm about to say is just the research. I'm not, church planting is amazing, and a lot of these act like church plants anyway, but just for a comparative standpoint, they tend to grow faster than church plants when they start. They tend to lead more people to Christ. They baptize more, and their lay leaders, they end up in employing more lay leadership over the first few years. And so for all those reasons, and then when you kind of compare the money to that, churches are realizing it's a pretty wise investment in terms of dollar for dollar spending. They can get something up faster in a neighborhood that has more impact quicker if it's within a half an hour kind of range. And so I think, there's a reason that that's being used. What's interesting is that 85% of all multi-site campuses are growing. So that's obviously attractive. The latest stats that I saw in a three-year window for campuses that are started are that the first year they grow at about 28%, the second year they grow at 25%, and the third year they grow at 14%. When you're able to dial up in a three-year window 65-ish percent growth, people are pretty encouraged about that. We could go on forever talking about those stats, but those are probably the most interesting ones. The last one I'll drop in there that maybe we can talk about later is just that about 4 out of 10 new campuses that'll start this year will actually come through church mergers. So that's a new developing trend in the multi-site movement, and maybe we can touch on that later, because that's something for people to keep their eyes open to. As dying churches or older churches or smaller churches are just saying, hey, we want to have impact. We see God's hand is on you guys. How do we partner together and make that happen? So that's one of the newer trends that's interesting.
Yeah. And Corey, you are just full of numbers there. Love that. And love how all of those are very missional, right? And like they are about, they're more than just budget lines. They're about continuing to grow and extend the gospel. Jim, I'd love to hear just kind of initially as we get going into the conversation, why did you guys at Urbana start thinking about multi-site? What was the process for you and maybe why? What was the heart behind it?
Yeah, so the process really of us going into a multi-site church was because we had a large number of people driving about an hour to church who were pretty engaged on Sunday, but not very engaged through the week. And we were trying to figure out, like, missionally, how do we influence more communities around us? And so what seemed like a natural thing really was to try to put a church in that community with really – that was kind of the initial set was, let's just put a church there. Let's church plant. But the negative of the church plant was we really didn't have at that point anybody who was ready to go there. And because we didn't have anyone who was ready to go there, we thought, let's try. It was multi-site was relatively new. This was 2009. Let's try something that's kind of unconventional. Let's try a multi-site and just see if it has any life. And it kind of took off from there. But what we found was actually just what Corey said. We engaged so many more volunteers. All of a sudden, people were stepping in that had been sitting on the sidelines, actually driving to Urbana Church. They started stepping in and serving. And because they started serving, it became, there was obviously the ownership thing and the thing of being missional in our own community. We saw a lot of life, people just kind of coming to life, really, and start reaching out to those around them. And saw life change, really, and community change. So we saw transformed lives, first of all, and what we're seeing now is the ripple effect of that is transformed communities, which is really an interesting side note that we weren't necessarily aiming at, but it's been interesting to see that. So we have been very focused on leadership. We pretty much have put them out based on leaders. So if we have a leader in an area and a little bit of momentum, we will go there. We have not... At this point, we have generally put out really one campus, and it's only been out a few months, that is kind of in a newer area that someone actually literally moved some distance, almost an hour, and is putting a campus there. It's going fairly well. We had a campus, a campus there. We really didn't. We were kind of a sister church that gave us their campus, really. So that's worked well for us. It's been we're very leader-driven. So if we have a leader who says, I'm in this area, I see life here, then that's how we kind of identify the next area, given that it's in a certain circle. But we have picked a lot of our low-hanging fruit, so that means we're starting to be a little more strategic. We're starting to look at maps and say, what's it look like now? And that's kind of how we got into it. What's really about for us, it's about multiplying churches into small areas. We are in central Illinois, which Champaign-Urbana is the largest city within, probably next is maybe Bloomington or an hour away. So we're going into small cities of 5,000 to 10,000. And those are churches or areas we would not have planted churches in, but because we have a multi-site model that works, we can go in those areas and put in a viable church that brings life to the community.
Yeah, I love that both you and Corey are in very different contexts with Jim, you really looking at like, how do we reach a lot of these really small towns around. And Corey, you're kind of right now at least thinking quite a bit about, hey, let's look at the Denver metro area and let's hit these neighborhoods and let's get community starting all over there. So I think that's just going to bring more and more in our conversation today. Corey, give us a bit of an overview of the phases that you've seen for multi-site and kind of go there. And before you do, I just want to say, hey, if there's any questions, Jonathan, Josh, and Steve, just throw them. We want to pause and address any of those questions along the way. We're going to be asking a little bit kind of where you see yourself on these phases of multi-site that Corey's going to talk about. So as he's talking, just kind of get a sense of like, where are we right now? Are we just starting? Are we discerning? Or are we, down the road a little bit? Because we'd love to hear from you once Corey kind of walks through it. So Corey, give us the overview. How have you seen this work?
Sure. Yeah. Hey, just real quick before I do that, I thought it might be helpful for those who are listening or will watch the recording. Just a lot of people don't know in the Vineyard, we have about 30 churches right now that are engaged in the multi-site model. So just for whatever that's worth. And that represents somewhere around, I think, 70 different locations. So that's kind of the scope of the Vineyard movement itself. And that's in line with most of our larger churches are engaged in that. So for whatever that's worth. Yeah. So what I find is, I work with churches, and as I've, you know, done it in Columbus and now, Denver, is that, there's effectively three phases, or excuse me, there's four phases that, most churches go through. The first one is discernment. That's where I end up bumping into a lot of churches. They're in the process of, is multi-site for me or for our church? What would that even mean? You know, that kind of stuff. What is the Lord asking of us? The second phase is a phase of preparation. That's trying to figure out, you know, what is it that we know that we don't know, and trying to go and get all the answers that we need, so we're not ignorant and in the dark anymore, and preparing. And there's a whole bunch of key questions that we ask in the midst of the preparation stage, to try to bring light to that darkness of the things we don't know. And then obviously the execution stage, where we're just going after it, we're into it, we've picked a leader, we've picked a location, we have a date set on the calendar, and we're going to launch, and then we're going to learn a lot in that first 6 months. And then we're, you know, once we get out of the gate and we get going somewhere, and, you know, we're always evaluating, but in that 6 month to 1 year window, there's a series of, you know, evaluations that come along to really help us understand how we're doing, where we're at, what adjustments we need to make, which, interestingly enough, then sort of leads back, if you think about it, just as one big loop with an arrow, it leads back to discernment. You know, once we evaluate, we're back to, okay, what now is the Lord asking of us? What are the tweaks? What are the changes? How do we follow him now in this new season to, you know, continue to be able to grow and to reach the community that we're in.
That's really helpful. Jim, what, you know, as you think about these phases, what's been kind of your process? You mentioned a lot of that comes up when you have a leader or you're preparing leaders. How do you kind of fit those leaders into the larger strategy that you're working with as a church?
You know, and that discernment part is probably crucial for us in that phase. So when someone comes to us and says, hey, I'm interested in this area, what do you guys think? That's when we kind of go through really a discernment of, like, is this the right leader? Is this the right area? Is this a win? You know, is this a win for the community, really? How does it affect? I mean, we even look at how does it affect our sending church, or sending, in this case, Urbana usually sends most of them out. How does that affect them? You know, like, generally those are leaders who are serving at some point. So that means it's going to take a toll on our leadership somewhere. So, you know, are we prepared for that? So we really start discerning at that point. Once we make that decision, we say, okay, we're ready to move forward. We're in the preparation stage. Then we start setting, we're pretty system bound in this, that we set some metrics that we're looking at. So, like, how many people do we have that will be on the team? How many people do they have currently that are willing to go? We don't start looking at buildings or any of those kind of things. So we've got all those things in place. So we put a lot on the leader. We're pretty leader central in that if we have a leader who we believe is the right leader going to the right place, we put a lot on them to say, here's the parameters we want you to work within. Here's what we want you to develop. We'll help you. We'll coach you. We'll work with you. We'll stay in relationship with you. But we give them some pretty, in that preparation stage, give them a lot of things, like to say, these are the things that we want to see. So then that's how we go into an area, is through a leader. You know, when once we get it in, there is a continual, like Corey said, that continual loop that we go through, though, of, like, you know, once we're in the process, we're evaluating, is this working? Is this going the way it should be? What's the next thing we need to be doing? But initially, we go through a discernment process with the leader before we move into really what we would call preparation stage and moving forward.
Yeah, that's great. And we're gonna zoom in a little bit to that discernment process and hear a little bit from Corey and Jim in a minute about kind of what are those questions that you're asking. But we would also love to hear from Jonathan, Josh, Steve, you know, as you're on the call, if you guys in your church kind of right now, where are you at in the process? You know, are you really just in that discernment? Your pre-discernment of thinking, well, what is this multi-site stuff? Or you're kind of preparing and you're starting to move forward with it. or you might already have campuses at your church. We'd love to, if you just want to throw some comments in the chat window there and say, hey, here's where we're at, or here's what we're thinking about. That'll help us kind of just tailor the rest of the conversation here a little bit to you guys, because we want to do that. Why don't we take a minute then, Corey, as you are working with folks in the discernment process, what are these kind of questions that you're asking them? What are the ways that you're dialing up what God's doing in their life and trying to discern if this is the right thing for them as a leader, or if this is the right thing as the church to be moving forward in?
Yeah, I see your question, Steve, so we'll get there. I mean, there's a couple key questions that we run through with churches, our own and other churches that we work with. I tend to see this as kind of a funnel that starts at the top broadly and then, you know, narrows to the bottom. And the first one is just a question of what's motivating us. You know, one of the things we talk with churches about is, you know, it obviously is a move of God, you know, this multi-site model and what's happening in America. And, but it doesn't mean that's for everybody. You know, the average church in America right now that goes multi-site is between 850 and 1200 people. And so, you know, it doesn't mean you can't go multi-site smaller, but my point is everybody looks out and see multi-sites really doing well and all that. And sometimes we just want to jump in and assume it'll work for us. And I know this is a real low bar in the vineyard. I get it. We listen to the Spirit of God, but I think it's really key to go, what is motivating us? And for me personally, if it's not the lost, if it's not the unchurched, I'm not sure that there's enough motivation to carry us through, you know, if we're not stretching, because embracing the multi-site model really changes your church and it complicates your church. It's a lot easier to stay a single site. And so when you're in the middle of all those headaches and the meetings and we got to think about the other thing and that, and it changed this and what about this staffing? I think at the end of the day, us remembering like Jesus has asked us to be on mission in partnership with him to reach those who are far from him. That's a key piece. Obviously there's lots of other pieces around the development of leaders and, you know, and there's pieces of the town that we can't reach and all that. So just the first question is, you know, what's motivating us? Second question is our single site, or if we're at two sites, we're thinking about 3, 4, 5, are they healthy? Key question there is you reproduce who you are. So if you're in a single location and you're not leading people to Jesus, you're not baptizing people, or you haven't really figured out how to reproduce leaders, you don't have a strong leader pipeline. Those are all things I encourage churches, hey, hit pause for 12 to 18 months and get really good at helping people come to Christ, baptizing them, developing your leadership pipeline, because whatever you are, however healthy you are, that's what you're going to reproduce in another location. Well, some churches fall into this dangerous trap of if we just start something new, we'll be healthier over there. And so, you know, so it's important to think about that. The finances, I think, speak for themselves. That's the third thing I talk to churches about, multi-site. I mean, honestly, what I've seen is multi-site will cost you anywhere between in the first year. Totally depends on, do you have a volunteer leader? Are you going to pay the campus pastor? All of that. Are you going to rent a location? Literally anywhere between $40,000 and $250,000. So you have to think about, do we have that in the bank? Is that, you know, is the Lord asking us to make that investment? Can we raise that from our church? Can we raise that from the core team of 50 who want to do it? But finances are a big deal because generally there's technology involved and, you know, you're doing church all over again. The fourth question I asked, do we have the right leader? And outside of motivation, this is probably the second most important question, even though it's number four on my list. Once you understand your motivation, you're looking for your man or your woman. And the key stat for 10 years in the multi-site movement has been the leader, the campus pastor. If you ask the question, what determined the success or failure of any given campus in America, the number one stat it always comes back to is who was leading it, and begin to discuss that. And so the leader is huge. Jim mentioned that. Everything I've ever been involved in has been leader-centric. God's hand is on a leader, and we see it, and we begin to honor that and figure out what God is doing. And then we begin to wonder, are there a group of people around that leader in their part of the town or wherever they're at and God is up to something. It doesn't mean you can't do it the other way, that you can't target a city and then look for a leader, but I'm with Jim in that, and that it's always been watching and observing God's hand on people. And then finally, have we chosen the right location? And there's a whole discussion around, you know, what that means. And then the last thing I would say at the bottom of the funnel is just, if you can answer those questions affirmatively and you think the Lord is in it, just the final question's a kind of a theoretical, philosophical question, but it is, are we all in? Because a lot of people get hurt when churches treat campuses like experiments, especially their first one. And yes, there's a large learning curve, but it's really, really important, outside of having the right leader, that the senior pastor and their team is really on board and says, we're all in on this. We're going all in. This is the key strategy, or one of our key strategies for reaching people. And we're going to resource it at the level it needs and pay attention to it and make decisions in light of having multiple locations and not just one. So those are kind of the key questions that end up in the discernment phase. And we start there. And then, you know, obviously every church has a unique set of circumstances. So we dive into those after that.
Thanks, Corey. That's great. And just so everybody knows, I just sent over two resources. One was just kind of our overview of the phases. And then the next one there was those key questions. So if you've been furiously taking notes, don't worry. You can rest your fingers and your writing utensil. We're sending that over to you guys. You can just grab that and download it via PDF there. And we had a couple of really great comments along the way. So Steve, you mentioned you guys are in phase three for an offsite campus that will launch on July 17th. That's awesome. This Sweet. Summer, another one. Mm-hmm. And then also have a phase four evaluation that is launched on an onsite campus in October 2015. So you guys are very much so kind of doing it and in the process. And Josh, you guys are doing some discernment and preparation in between those two. Love that. And Jonathan saying, hey, we're at the beginning of our process and discerning what God's calling for your guys' lives are for you and your wife. Well, you're not far from Corey in Colorado. I think he might want to pull you into some church planting around there if possible.
I know Jonathan.
So Jim, as you hear that, the phases, or as you hear kind of where Steve and Josh and Jonathan are, what kind of things are bubbling up for you in that discernment process when you think about where they're at?
The question from Steve that I have a question kind of he followed up with about an adoption. I have for you, Steve, is that an adoption that you're talking about launching July 17th, or is that a brand new campus? I didn't quite understand that, I guess, or clarify that for me if you would. I think that's a super challenging. Adoptions are so different. We actually did an adoption several years ago. It ended up being the first job I did as an executive pastor. I closed it and we left it for a couple of years and reopened it recently as a new campus. Just to speak to that a little bit, if you're adopting, one of the things, and Jim Templeton has a great book about that, and you might want to read that. That's just, he's a great resource, has some great stuff to say. I do know that in the adoption process, and one of the things that this is a learning that we have is that we should have probably restarted the campus, like closed it down as a former campus. It was a vineyard that we had planted years ago, but it was very different, and the pastor left to go to the mission field, and several things happened there. But you know, just looking back, one of the mistakes we made is not bringing them fully on board with us and saying, we're just going to close this down for a time to restart it. I know Timberland even talks about some of that in his book. But if that's the same location, that's just one of the learnings that we had, is trying to figure that out when just talking to Steve. But, you know, just thinking through, like even with Josh's question being between discernment and preparation, just restating what Corey said, the senior leadership team being on board 100% is just crucial of being part of your vision. And then the next thing after that is actually the right leader in that funnel. And if you have those two things, a lot of the other things, this is what we found, a lot of the other things start falling in line pretty quickly. But if you don't have those two things, it's like you may as well start back at the top and work through discernment again, and just kind of start the process over. because clarity in that right leader is just crucial. Corey's right. Multi-site significantly complicates your church life and your church structure. I think it's probably one of our biggest, being into this for 7 years now, one of the biggest learnings we've had is that it changed our church structure tremendously and significantly, and continues to change it. So it is a big thing to take on in that change. So I would just encourage you to, you know, discern well about your, as senior leaders, I know Josh, you're a senior leader, you know, where are you at in that process? And then also discerning well, who is that leader? And when you find the right leader, many of the rest of things like timing and location will begin to become pretty clear. I once heard Jeff Surratt, who talks a lot about multi-site, make this comment, and I agree with this. One of the best things to do with future multi-site campus pastor is actually to have them go serve or go look at a campus and actually be able to work. Multi-site campus pastors are raised up by multi-site campus pastors, was his actual quote. And that's really helpful. Like, it's just super helpful. The best thing I did as a multi-site campus pastor was to go look at two different ones and figure out not their model so much as what is actually needed for me as a leader. That was really helpful. Those are the couple things that I would say. Discern clearly, leadership. Are you on board? Are you all in on this deal? And then number two, discern clearly, who is the leader? And those two things get taken care of. And I know, Corey, you had a list of questions, but those two things are taken care of. The other things will begin to fall in line, I think, pretty quickly for you.
Corey, one of the big things that Jim was talking about there was the dynamic of how much it changes church structure to move to a multi-site model. Whatever your model is, there's so many different models that you can kind of be veering towards. Talk to us for a little bit about the big question of centralized versus decentralized, because I know that's kind of, in what you've said, there's a lot of movement there, and that's at least a little bit of what Jim was saying, that you have to ask big questions around how your church is actually structured. So what's been your process at Mile High to really wrestle through some of that, and where are you at now?
Yeah. Well, so I've had the unique experience in that I was at the Columbus Vineyard, where everything was centralized. And then now being at Mile High Vineyard, we've chosen to decentralize. And we're in the process of doing that. So we're moving from a more central model to a decentralized model. And really, it's just how you think about leadership. So who gets to make what decisions when? Who's in charge of that? That kind of determines, like, we're asking questions about how much we trust the, if you want to call them campus pastors. In our context, we call them neighborhood church pastors. We want to make them the lead pastors. So you're talking about some issues of trust there. So it's questions around the type of people you're hiring and that you're working with. And then it's really just, you're dealing with a lot of things like, who supports who? So how many admins, and are they at the center and they support everybody, or does every location have its own? Who's doing the books? How does that work? It's a lot of questions about, I don't necessarily like the question who's in charge, but who's leading in what venues and at what level. And the more you decentralize, the more you're pushing that to the edges, to the churches or the campuses themselves. And you're saying, you're in charge. You get to make these decisions. And that has certainly implications for them. It also has certain implications for the center. If you have, you know, sort of a central team that's overseeing the campuses or the churches, there's some things your handprints don't get to be on, that you don't get to say. Or it's different than just the centralized model tends to be a little bit more top-down, tends to be a little bit more hierarchical in structure. It's a clearer chain of command, so to speak. We know who's making the shots. We know who we have to ask. We know which committee it has to go to get the decision. I think it's probably a little cleaner in that regard. And my experience is more of the centralized models tend to be the larger churches. So churches that are thousands and thousands of people who tend to have a pretty dynamic center, oftentimes one very catalytic leader, those tend to be more centralized. I'm finding on the smaller end, like maybe a couple thousand people or smaller, you're seeing more of the decentralized model go and a spreading of leadership and decision making across the spectrum.
Jim, what as you see that, you guys are very much in the kind of working with a little bit more of a centralized model compared to Corey. What are the strengths that you've seen? Similar to what he was saying there, what are the strengths as you're very much managing and supporting and helping lead the multi-sites that you have?
Yeah, I think probably the centralized way of doing it, I mean, we'd launched that way originally. We're actually weighing a lot of things right now, which we continue to do. We're continuing to evaluate that evaluation process. But I think that the central process, the helpful thing is initially at launch, there's less things for that campus going out to deal with. So it's more controlled. They know what they're doing. Like, we know that when my campus pastor goes out to launch, their number one priority, first of all, is gather a team. Secondly, is to really focus on growing that campus. And that means serving their community. I mean, getting out in the community and doing the stuff. Our structure is not formed such that we actually pay them enough money, honestly, to do a lot of other stuff other than go out and do the work. Like for them to do a lot of extra hours preparing a message or something like that is just, we just don't pay them enough to do that, honestly. So when they sign up, they know that they're primarily responsible to gather a team, coach the team, grow the team, focus on growing their church, and not on too many other things. That's one of the strengths, I think, that we have seen. So they're not worried about the finance so much. They're not worried about keeping track of numbers. They're not worried about necessarily finding the right kids curriculum or any of those kinds of things, or even finding sermon series, really. They're doing a lot of that centrally. So that gives them an opportunity to really focus on the outside things of growing a church. Now they do, to answer some questions, they do speak publicly, obviously, too. So that's important that they have some communication skills, but their primary responsibility is to work growing the church. So I think that's probably the win. Financially, we're taking all care of all that at a central location. We're taking care of all of the programming at a central location. They're not worried about communications and all of those kinds of things, websites. We take all that responsibility at a central location. I mean, the negative of that is we take that as a central responsibility. There's a lot of cost involved. And I think, to Corey's point, part of the reason a lot of the larger churches have more of a central team is because they can afford it, quite honestly, because it is expensive. It seems like as you have more locations, it should actually costs go down. But what we found is, particularly in our communications team requiring more and more video and high quality things. So the thing that I say is a win kind of for my campuses, I say you get big church quality in a small church. I think that's a win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For most churches. I mean, most people like the small church feel, but they want big church videos. They want, they want all the quality stuff, but they want it in a church of 200. And so it doesn't equate. And so that's a win that we see, having more of a central location.
So Corey, Jonathan asked a really helpful question. And I know this kind of came up when we were talking earlier. His question is, how do you develop campus pastors in the art of teaching and preaching and leadership? What does that look like for you guys with a more decentralized model, where maybe some of that, isn't done via video or things like that? How do you guys do development for teaching and preaching for those leaders?
Right. So the newest thing that we've started that we're actually falling in love with is twice a month we meet with all of our communicators and people who are going to be communicating, and we whiteboard sermons. So everybody knows coming to that day, we're working on two sermons, and they're the next two out, typically the next two Sundays out. And so everybody brings their ideas. Right now, we use a very simple template from Andy Stanley just to help people think about that. And they come with their ideas. They know the topic. We whiteboard it. And then we get some ideas. Everybody scratches those out. And then our lead guy, Jay, he's gifted enough that we literally, we walk into the other room from the meeting room. We get up on, he gets up on a stage and he just tries it. He just does a 30-minute sermon off what we've talked about, you know, throws in all of his thoughts on that. And then everybody just watches that, takes any notes they want. And then we have a dialogue afterwards, like, hey, why did you do that? Hey, that fit, that didn't fit. I would probably put this here. What do you think about that? We have a team discussion. And then everybody goes and they do what they want at that point. So our communicators are all talking about the same topic, using the same text. But obviously a lot of their stuff is going to be different, the way they, you know, the structure of their sermon, the examples they use. But we had a chance to build it as a team and to at least see it modeled to get an idea for the feel. And then obviously we're talking about what is the ministry time? What do we want? What is the win out of the day? And so that's worked really well for us. And we've seen a couple of our communicators in a 6-month window get dramatically better. There's something about getting to work on it up front and then seeing it that then they've got a week to think about it. They've gotten just a lot sharper.
Jim, yeah. when you hear about that, yeah, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, we actually did something. We've been doing this probably for about a year and a half. We have a preaching team. Our preaching style is a little different, that we have a team of about four people really that preach on a kind of a rotating schedule. And we actually get together, the campus pastors come in every Tuesday, and we literally hear the message on Tuesday. We all get in the room then after the message is done and just kind of give some feedback on it. Like, how this went well, this didn't go well, this doesn't fly at the campuses, this does fly at the campus, this might fly. And then about once every 4 weeks, our campus pastors are on within that schedule. So, for example, Father's Day, all of our campus pastors will be preaching in-person messages. So Tuesday, we all sat in the room together and said, okay, here's kind of where our messages are going. And then the speaking pastor, our speaking pastors will then share our outlines with each other via email. But we all get to hear a message on Tuesday before it's preached on Sunday and get feedback to it. So it actually, and then if you're preaching, so Father's Day we'll be preaching, so Tuesday we'll all get an opportunity to be preaching our messages as well. And then we'll get feedback as well. So that's worked well. We're also doing a once a quarter kind of a preaching training. We're doing the book Preaching on Your Feet right now. Just reading through it together. We'll get together next Tuesday for an hour, go through the book and have a feedback session. Our preaching team lead person will lead that discussion. And so we have lots of interaction. So we're developing their art of teaching really and preaching through that. Then the leadership piece of that, the question Jonathan asked, the leadership piece of that, I personally just work with them a lot in that. And we're continually passing information back and forth. And I try to meet with them on a regular basis about every quarter. I will meet with them individually, like each campus pastor individually. We meet every week together, but individually we'll meet every week and talk about any leadership challenges that are coming down the pike or how's your team doing, those kinds of things. So yeah, that's what we do.
Thanks, Jim. Corey, you have any thoughts there? You look like something was on the tip of your tongue.
Well, I guess I would just amen the leadership piece. I didn't address that, but typically when we're thinking about the next location, we want to put, if we have a leader and we think we have a location, and oftentimes that's an 18-month runway or a 2-year runway as they're building small groups and community in their area, we typically want to have them in one of our other churches, our other locations, putting them on the stage, giving them a chance to preach, you know, several times, you know, doing announcements, help checking in on kids ministry. We're just trying to get their feet wet and get them to start thinking like, hey, if you're in charge, what is the lens through which you need to see your life, you know, whether it's during the week or on Sundays? And so, you know, in a 12-month window, like, for example, the best example is we just did a fourth church last fall, and we're thinking about another one further south in town. The guy that's thinking about doing it, we just agreed, hey, you're going to go be the right-hand guy to that fourth church. So for a year, you're just going to be there, figure out Sundays, we're going to put you on the stage, you're going to teach, you're going to lead, you're going to figure out kids, all that, all the while building small groups in your area. So as a way of preparing them and then having monthly conversations about what are they seeing and what are the challenges and all of that.
That's great. I'm just going to send over another resource for on the kind of topic of preparation. So that being phase two here, which is really what we've been talking about. So much of what Corey and Jim, I think, offer is not only kind of the model and the framework to be thinking about, but also the history and the potholes that they've bumped over along the way. And so we want to just be making sure these guys are accessible and answering any questions along the way. Jonathan says, thanks so much, just excellent stuff, and had a question previously about adoption. And I think that's an area that we wanted to make sure we touched on just for a little bit, which is Jonathan's question was, what are the different challenges between adoption and a new multi-site? And then we'll throw in there kind of church mergers, kind of that as a way to think about adoption as well. Jim, you've lived that adoption piece and you brought that up, that was really hard. Any quick comments on adoptions, mergers, and multi-site?
I think adoptions or mergers are learning. There's a process of learning in there. I think it's getting better. I know initially when we did this process was about 8 years ago, and there was just 8 years ago. That's not true. 6 years ago. It was the year after we launched. There wasn't a lot of information out there. I think Jim Timberland's information is super helpful, but I do know one of the huge things in adoption and one of the huge things that we went through, even though we were adopting an existing Vineyard church, was that values of two churches and two different leaderships are very different. So we didn't really count the cost very well in that, like trying to bring two different values together of two different leaders, and the vision really for the churches were different. For instance, we brought on a church that was a church of about 50 people. They really didn't have much interest in growing any larger than that. And our vision for that was very different. They're in a nice large town that is could very easily support a church of like several hundred. And you know, it seemed like they should be growing, but they were fine where they were. And when our vision changed for the church, for the campus, we lost half the church immediately, which actually Jim Timberland will tell you that you'll lose half the church almost up front on a merger. So we just didn't count the cost well with that. When you're doing a new multi-site, the thing is you get to set the vision. It's your vision from the get-go. And it's very different because people are coming into the church because it's your vision, as opposed to a merger where you have two different visions and two different ideas. You know, we want to see people's lives radically changed. We want to see people's hearts changed. We want to see communities changed. In the case that we joined with this church, it really wasn't their vision at all to see that happening. And it was kind of like, we're a small dying church. Please help us become a church that can survive. And so we just didn't count the cost well. That would be the huge pothole that I saw for us, was we didn't count the cost of coming together. Talking to people who'd done it well, they said, you know, we probably should have just closed the campus down for a time and said, this is a new church, a new vision. Then people would have not been upset. We lost some people just that were disgruntled and a little upset, feeling like, oh, we didn't know that since you're a Vineyard that you would have a different vision than we do. So that was probably one of our huge pitfalls. I would say if you can get the same vision, just recently talked to somebody actually who's doing this, and they were pretty sure that their visions were not the same. And I said, well, if your visions aren't the same, it's going to be a very difficult merger. So that would be the challenge of adoption, I think, is just vision primarily.
Jim, thanks. And thanks for your honesty on just like that was hard for you guys, you know, and that you were working that through. Corey, what are you thinking about mergers? You said there's a lot of shift to that's where things are moving in a lot of ways. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Just to go back to the stat, 4 in 10 new campuses, 4 out of every 10 campuses that'll start this year will be because of merger. And so first of all, I think the Lord's in that. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I think what Jim is saying is real. It's very challenging. And that's why we need people like Jim and Jim Tomerlin, who wrote a book. There's lots of churches now that have gone through this experience, so it's important to ask. The one thing that I always say, I mean, because there's 9,000 logistics, you know, is there a mortgage on the building? Is their senior pastor remaining on staff? Is any of their staff remaining on staff? What if they had an elder board? All those things are the things you have to work on. Where I've always been with this and what I've encouraged churches to think about is I think it's a total takeover. So that is how I've always talked to churches when they're thinking about adoption. If the vision is key, but then the second question is, if you want us to take you over, we're taking you over. That means we get to decide. Now, we may decide as the church is taking you over that, yes, your senior pastor is staying on staff and he's going to be on our team that makes decisions. That's fine. But oftentimes that will catch churches sort of, that will make them step back. You know, like Jim said, that church they dealt with, well, they just wanted to survive and wanted to keep themselves. When you start using total takeover language, that really clears things for people and you get really quick to the heart of what their motivation is. And so many of these churches have great motivation. It's, we've poured our blood and guts into this thing. We've poured our finances in this thing. We just want it to have a legacy. Please take us over and use what we've given to. That's the best possible scenario. It gets muddier and harder when it's other things. Like, we're trying to figure out how to stay alive, and this pastor needs to get paid. So what does that mean? That's a much harder situation. And frankly, I would steer clear of that unless you just have ample, you know, hundreds of hours of your life to give away to such a thing.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful to think about it in just a more honest way, right? And say, hey, this is how to work on getting a vision aligned, you need to do that, and having that as core right out the gate is super important. Yeah. So
as a follow-up to that, Justin, just interestingly enough, that church ended up, we did end up closing that down, but we actually launched another campus in that town 2 years later. And many of those people actually came on board, but now with fresh energy, because they actually knew the vision very clearly was one thing and what the vision was. So it can work. I think it's just clarity. Like Corey said, get it up front. Like, hey, this is a total takeover. This is where we're going. And actually the campus is doing really well. So it's exciting for that part.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So as we wrap up here, we have a little bit more time left. If there's any other questions, we want you to send them over. Please do that. I'm going to send you over a free resource here. This is just kind of our overview of multi-sites. We have a bunch of videos and resources on the Multiply Vineyard page. If you just head over there. But as we've talked the whole time, we're only scratching the surface to the kind of thousands of questions and decisions that get made. Corey mentioned just so many logistics that you need to run into that you need to be learning from folks who are already doing this. And I sent over the link to the book that Jim was mentioning there. That's another great one. But Corey, I want to just kind of promote you guys and the work you're doing with multi-site coaching, just so folks can hear that again and know that that's available. What are you offering to Vineyard pastors who are kind of in the process of discernment and doing multi-site, and how do they get involved?
Yeah. So effectively I'm on the Multiply Vineyard team, with Justin, working with Michael. And really what Michael and I, as we talked, you know, our dream was really, to be able to offer really great resources for like no cost. Because if you go out and you have to hire a multi-site coach, you're probably talking anywhere between $5,000 and $20,000, to have, you know, a professional coach that coaches you, which for some organizations, that's nothing. But for a lot, especially for our Vineyard churches, that's a lot. So our dream has been to offer really great resources, for free. And so Michael and I have kind of worked that out, and then we've been able to build a great team, which, you know, Jim is on, and we have some other coaches that are on. Our goal would be really to work with churches anywhere in the process. So discernment process, like, hey, how do we even think about if multi-site is it, you know, all the way through, hey, we already decided we're in it. I'll work with a lot of churches that they've already discerned, and now they've hit the preparation stage, and they realize, wow, there's 12 questions here that we didn't know were going to come up, and we need help. What are other people doing? And so effectively what happens is I'll do anything from a one-time phone call that's an hour that, you know, someone has a couple questions to get them unstuck, all the way through literally coaching every month, coaching the leadership team of a church, all the way through. So a great example, helped out with the Phoenix Vineyard with Brian Anderson, worked with them on a monthly basis, with them as a leadership team, with their campus pastor, all the way up to launch, and actually came on site for the launch, to be there at the launch and help with logistics. And the great thing about Multiply Vineyard is that Michael's agreed to pick up the entire tab. So it's just a free resource for whatever you need. So there's coaching that's monthly or one-off or whatever. It's on-site for launches. And then we've tried to build as much content as we can on the Multiply Vineyard website. So there's a lot of videos there which cover a lot of the basics. And I encourage people to go there. And then we've put about 15 or 20 docs that Jim and I found helpful, especially early on when we were trying to work our way through and learn a lot about the multi-site movement. So bottom line is we just want to be helpful. The way I've worked it out with Michael and what I do at Mahi Vineyard is that I have a certain amount of hours every month that are just allotted to helping churches in our movement think about multi-site. So it's something that I love to do and have made space for in my professional life.
And thank you so much, Corey, for doing that. We launched out here from Duluth, where I'm at. We launched our last multi-site in the fall. And Corey was really instrumental at just coaching along the way, the pastors who were doing that. It was such a healthy way to get somebody outside of the community giving some extra feedback. Because that coach who, you know, those pastors were getting support for launch. They were getting coached from within our community, from our senior pastors, Michael and Brenda. But also to have that sounding board like Corey to come in and say, well, hey, what am I not thinking about? What am I, you know, how do I move forward? Here's the struggle I'm facing as we're trying to make decisions around who has say and how do we make this move forward. So Corey, thanks for all that, because even sure. From here at our church, that was just really valuable. And those campus pastors, every time they get done with a call, they'd say, wow, I got to talk to Corey today. That was really helpful. I have some more clarity on this whole process. So
my pleasure. Thanks, Justin.
Yeah. And Josh is saying, thanks for sharing. Great to hear this stuff and getting stirred more about this stuff. I appreciate your leadership and availability. Josh, thanks for being here. And I just want to, we're gonna wrap up here. I do want to mention, we got another webinar happening next week that I'd love for anybody who's watching this to join the Healthy Multi-Ethnic Vineyard Church. We're going to have some of the pastors from the South Suburban Vineyard, just outside of Chicago, and the Elm City Vineyard in Connecticut joining us. That's the Olesons and the Williams talking deeply about, well, what does it look like to have a multi-ethnic community in the vineyard, and what does that ministry look like? What are the challenges and benefits of that model of church and church planting? And we'd be remiss to also not promote and say that there is, just outside of Chicago at the Evanston Vineyard this fall, the National Ethnic Diversity Conference, Better Together, Race Reconciliation, the Multi-Ethnic Vineyard Church. So next week, you'll get a preview from some of our pastors who are doing that. And we'd love to join you. Multiply Vineyards there, a ton of folks from Vineyard USA and pastors from all over the nation are going to be really thinking about that as we move towards this. If you want to keep talking about this, we'd love to get you connected to the forum. We'd also love to get you connected to Corey for coaching. And we're just really thankful for everything that that these guys brought to us today. Jim, we should say it again, just thanks for all your work at Urbana and in Illinois there. And thanks for giving your wisdom on the call today.
Sure, no problem. My pleasure.
And Corey, thanks for being with us from Nebraska today, and blessings to everything you're doing there in Colorado and in the Denver area. We're just so appreciative of what you're doing.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you, Justin. Thanks for putting this together.
Yeah. And Jim, would you just pray for us as we close and pray for any multi-sites that are about to be launched or in the process?
Sure. Father, we're so grateful and so thankful for what you're doing in our movement, Lord, within the Vineyard and within multi-sites particularly. Thank you for how you've moved and how you've changed lives and how we've seen transformed lives and even transformed communities already. And Father, I pray particularly for those who are in the process of discernment or even moving forward any one of those phases, Father, that you would give wisdom and clarity and direction. And Lord, that there'd be, we'd see more lives transformed, more cities transformed, Lord, and just, we just invite your kingdom wherever you're going and whatever method you choose to use, whether that's through adoptions, whether that's through new multi-sized church planting. Father, we're so grateful. So I ask your blessing, Lord, and just on this time, and all, that these things would multiply and continue to go forward. In Jesus' name.
Amen.
Amen. Well, thank you, guys. And thanks for the folks joining and the folks who watched the recording. We'll see you next time.
Amen.